This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, the weekend edition of Family Research Council's Washington Watch.
Hello and welcome to the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. I'm David Salkeld. There's been a lot of discussion this week surrounding the final report by the House Select Benghazi Committee released on Tuesday. Sadly, we haven't even scratched the surface of what's in this 800-page report. Going further, we were reminded that several security requests by Ambassador Chris Stevens had been ignored, a move that cost the lives of four Americans, including the ambassador. A memo released by Congressman Jim Jordan earlier this week asked the State Department to respond to why they ignored, quote, multiple requests for help from the team in Benghazi, leaving them to fend for themselves in a facility that was no match for a well-organized assault, end quote. Does he expect an answer to that important question? Member of the House Benghazi Select Committee and representative from the 4th Congressional District of Ohio, Jim Jordan, joined Tony on Tuesday.
Well, 2 years of hard work come to fruition today with this report. I want to first ask you to explain why you and Congressman Pompeo did an additional report on top of that which the committee did.
Yeah, the full report was is lengthy, it's comprehensive, it's the what happened, it's the facts and details about those facts. But we also felt that in addition to what happened, we needed to cover why it happened. Talk about the motive for the actions that took place. Why did they ignore the request to provide additional security in Benghazi? Why was America still there when almost every other country had decided to leave because the situation was so dangerous? You know, why did we stay there when a security agent talked about how it was a suicide mission and how another agent had said everybody in Benghazi is going to die if the security situation was so bad? Why did it take so long for the military to even start to move towards Benghazi and never even actually started moving there until after the attack was over, never even getting to Benghazi, only to get to Tripoli? And why did they mislead the American people? And when you ask those why questions, the facts rather strongly, very strongly show that it was political considerations that that overtook everything else. And so we felt it's important to not just present the facts, but present the facts and show why those decisions were made and what was going on. And that's what we did in our report.
Now let's talk, there's so much to try to unpack in this, but let's take a few of them. First, why did we not pull out of Benghazi, Libya, when everybody else was?
Because this was their crown jewel of foreign policy. I mean, this was supposed to be how it works. You know, you can overthrow a dictator, you can help with the Arab Spring, you can do it without putting boots on the ground. This is how the Clinton State Department, the Obama administration, foreign policy works, and they were so invested in this that it didn't matter about the security posture, that there were 200 security incidents that took place leading up to Benghazi, to the terrorist attack. It didn't matter because this was their big deal. Remember what Sidney Blumenthal sent an email to Secretary Clinton a couple days after Gaddafi is ousted in the summer of 2011. In that email, he closes off by saying, "This is a big moment for you. You are vindicated, but don't wait. Help Cleo now." And Cleo is a reference to the goddess of history. So he's saying this is historic. This is a huge moment. You need to recognize that and go to a press conference and talk about it. They were invested in this in spite of the fact that the security situation was so bad. And then 9/11 happened. And then they get a terrorist attack. And they're just 56 days before an election. Their legacy is on the line. And she's got the, quote, goddess of history looking over her shoulder. They can't tell the truth. They got to mislead the American people, and that's exactly what they did with this video narrative.
Well, I don't know if it's a goddess of history or the demons of the narrative that this administration seems to follow. I mean, this is very similar to ISIS being called the JV team, that because it doesn't fit with the narrative that they've created, they basically lie, and as a result, people die.
Yeah. Remember, what I think maybe someone asked, what's the key takeaway? One of the key takeaways, I think, is that no military asset that was put in motion ever took off, ever even took off until the attack was over. But what did launch before the attack was over was the political spin. Never forget that at 10:08 on the night of the attack, there's a statement on Benghazi put out by the State Department that becomes the official statement of our government And this is where Secretary Clinton says, some have sought to justify this vicious behavior as a response to inflammatory material on the Internet. Going to the video right away. Going to the video while Tyrone Woods is still on the roof of the annex fighting for his life. And we know that was a misleading statement because later that night she tells her daughter, terrorists killed two of our people. And probably more importantly, the very next day she tells the Egyptian prime minister, we know the film had nothing to do with it. It was a planned attack, not a protest. And they kept this contrasting public versus private narrative, publicly spinning this story about it being a video-inspired protest leading to an attack, but privately telling the truth that it was a terrorist attack. So that continued for several days, and they did that again because they had political considerations that they were focused on just 8 weeks before an election, and the narrative out there that GM's alive, Bin Laden's dead, now Qaeda's on the run.
But they had to know that eventually the truth would catch up to them.
Well, you know, they ran with this, and they ran with this, and it's very clear. I think one of the things we've added in that I think is brought to the debate and brought out in the open is this idea that this narrative, how pervasive it was, privately right. telling the truth, publicly telling the American people a completely different story.
And it completely undermines the credibility of this administration, but beyond it undermines the credibility of government in general. Congressman, thank you so much for being with us. As always, appreciate talking to you, and we'll continue to unpack this, I'm sure, in the days ahead.
Thank you. Take care, brother.
You can find out more about Congressman Jordan when you visit tonyperkins.com. When we return, we'll hear from Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton about a new threat in Fort Worth. Don't go away. We'll be right back with more of the weekend edition of Washington Watch.
What's at stake at this election? A lot. From the freedom to publicly practice and proclaim your faith, to the nomination of Supreme Court justices, matters of critical importance to Christians are looming in the days ahead. Family Research Council and FRC Action stand at the forefront of this battle. In these turbulent times, we trust in God's Word that He is for us and that He will give us a future and a hope of prosperity. That's why we invite you to join us on September 9th through 11th in Washington, D.C. for the Values Voter Summit. Come to learn, be encouraged, and meet others who will stand for the renewal of this great nation. You'll hear the latest on the threats to our nation's security, your religious freedom, the privacy and safety of our children and grandchildren, and much more. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information and to register. That's valuesvotersummit.org.
The family is the heart of our economy. It is the greatest generator of knowledge, attitudes, skills, and habits of the individual, and is a generator of financial savings and capital. The vast majority of small businesses begin as family businesses, which eventually become the large businesses of the nation. Families are thus the great generators of business, and they are affected profoundly by the tax code. What Washington does to the family budget has a direct effect on the well-being of millions of moms, dads, and children. Given the importance of family economic well-being and the sluggishness of economic growth, Family Research Council proposes 5 short-term but productive actions that federal policymakers can take to help moms and dads better provide for their children through tax reform. To learn more about our family-friendly tax proposals, visit frc.org/taxes. Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. The effort to turn Texas blue continues, this time in Fort Worth. New guidelines from the Fort Worth Independent School District regarding transgender students is intended to outline different ways to handle restroom scenarios, stressing that students, quote, must feel comfortable and safe in the use of restrooms and locker room facilities, end quote. But the real intention, of course, is hidden. Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton believes this transgender policy violates state law by relegating, quote, parents to a subordinate status, end quote. Paxton also criticizes the privacy guideline, which would allow students to, quote, choose whether or not to have their parents participate in this process, end quote. which he states is, quote, far from creating a partnership between parents, educators, and administrators regarding their children's education, the guidelines relegate parents to a subordinate status, receiving information only on a need-to-know basis, end quote. What's next in the battle over Texas public school bathrooms? Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton has that answer.
Attorney General, welcome back to the radio program.
Hey, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
All right, give us an overview. This is generated, it was generated around activity in Fort Worth. A request for an opinion for you was given to your office. Give our listeners the background here of what's taking place.
So three days before the Obama administration came out with their guidelines on bathrooms and locker rooms and overnight stays, Fort Worth Independent School District came out with a policy that was issued by the superintendent without a vote of the school board, basically implementing these guidelines before they were actually put forth by the Obama administration. And they basically said the same thing, that parents didn't have to be told what their kids were doing as it relates to this transgender policy, and that it was basically implementing those guidelines that the president pushed forward, which allowed boys to be in girls' bathrooms, locker rooms, showers, and overnight facilities.
Now, is there any evidence to suggest that what we've seen in the administration, that they were working with certain school districts in certain parts of the country to try to get them to adopt these policies before they released their letter threatening all schools across the nation?
You know, it's interesting. I don't know that for a fact, but it sure is curious that Fort Worth Independent School District, the superintendent, comes out with this policy days before the bathroom guidelines issued by Obama, and they happen to almost match up exactly. And then in those guidelines, they threaten to take away school funding if you don't participate. And so I feel like there was going to be like this train rushing forward, and they were going to try to push schools as quickly as they could. And so that's the reason several things have happened. One is we filed a lawsuit with 12 other states against the Obama administration trying to slow it down and ultimately stop it. And then you have, like in my state, the Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick asked for an opinion about the Fort Worth policy and whether the superintendent had the ability to bypass parents and making these decisions and also bypass the school board. And, of course, we answered that resoundingly no yesterday, that parents have an absolute right to direct the education of their children, and they have a right to know what their kids are doing at school. And when you make a policy change this significant, the school board needs to vote on it.
So, General Paxton, when you look at this, obviously you're looking at this through the lenses of Texas law. That's what you do. But is there a possibility, based upon Texas law and what you have found in terms of how this violates Texas law, could the policy for the same grounds be violating state laws elsewhere?
Yeah, we're pretty sure that that's true because we're in this lawsuit with 12 other states, and I think there's going to be other states filing. And I think it, you know, obviously every state has different law, but I think it's going to have an impact, a negative impact on many state laws. And so I'm pretty sure that statement that you just made about it affecting other states is accurate.
So, General Paxton, when you look at this, you have some, and this is clear across the country, this is not just in Texas, you have some school administrators that are eager to, I think, adopt this policy, maybe working in concert with the Obama administration, maybe not, maybe doing it independently. Is there provisions in Texas law that would stop officials from doing this?
Well, I think there is, and that's why I'm grateful for the Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick asking the question about whether this is a violation of state law or not. And it is clearly a violation when they try to put in place policies that keep parents out of the decision-making process and significantly impact the education of our children. And so that's one of the reasons we were happy to put this out quickly, because we wanted school districts across the state to know that if they did this as well, they'd be in violation of state law as well. And obviously we're hoping that they'll pay attention to that opinion.
So that means, and I know you can only issue these opinions when they're asked for by state officials. That's your job. You represent the elected officials of the state. Let me ask you this. Is there a mechanism in the state law? Because oftentimes there's laws, they're violated, but there's no mechanism by which those that violate them can be held accountable. Is there in this case a means to hold accountable those who violate state law?
You know, I would guess that there would be a way for parents to sue the school district if they felt like their rights were being violated. So I would guess you're going to see parental lawsuits if school districts go forward with this. Now, fortunately, in my state, Fort Worth is the only one to adopt this policy. And again, it wasn't the school board; it was the superintendent. It was one man. Mm-hmm. And so, hopefully, our school districts won't move forward with this, given that it's clearly a violation of state law.
So, in that case, if the parents have to take action, it's going to be a civil matter, not a criminal matter.
Yes, that's correct. I believe that it would be a civil matter completely.
So, I know the legislature there in Texas only meets every other year, but this certainly should be something that the legislature looks at when you have local officials violating state law, having a provision by which they can be held criminally accountable for such violations.
You know, we'd certainly be open to helping the legislature craft something that would hold school administrators accountable for violating state law, especially in a circumstance that dramatically impacts our children's safety and well-being.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins, joined by Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton. General, one final question for you. Now, Texas is a party to the lawsuit that several states have launched. Is that not correct?
We actually are leading that lawsuit.
Right.
Organized a lawsuit. We're grateful to have 12 other states with us.
All right. What are the next steps in that lawsuit? What do you think is going to come from that?
Well, ultimately, we hope to stop this from being implemented, you know, fairly quickly. And then, similar to immigration, we were able to get a preliminary injunction in that case and stop it from being implemented. And then we haven't litigated the merits of that case, but then ultimately litigate the merits of the case, which are basically this, that the president doesn't have the authority to change law without it going to Congress. It's a very simple constitutional idea that we used to follow fairly regularly, but we're having a little more trouble recently.
Yeah, it's good that we have people reminding the president that that's the way the process works, because clearly he has forgotten that. Attorney General, thanks so much for joining us, and thank you for leading out on this issue and protecting the rights of parents and the privacy of children there in Texas, but by example, all across the country. Thanks for being with us.
Hey, thanks for having me on. It is an awfully important issue as it relates to the Constitution and presidential power, but also as it relates to the safety and well-being of our children.
You can find out more about Attorney General Paxton when you visit TonyPerkins.com. When we return, the Sons of Thunder join Tony to talk about what it's like to live among lions. Don't go away. We'll be right back with more of the weekend edition of Washington Watch. Every day, Christian values are being pushed out of the public square and out of public policy at an alarming rate. What can ordinary Christian citizens do to make their voices heard in an arena that is set on silencing them? FRC is here to help. Every week on the FRC blog, we will publish a question of the week that people like you are asking around the country, along with our answer. Send us a question you may have about how you can better live out your faith beyond the four walls of your church, or about any specific value that FRC continues to stand for, whether it be life, marriage and family, or religious liberty. Go to frc.org/contact and enter Question of the Week in the subject line for the chance to be published on our blog. Again, that's frc.org/contact and enter Question of the Week in the subject line. Thank you for standing with us.
What's at stake at this election? A lot. From the freedom to publicly practice and proclaim your faith, to the nomination of Supreme Court justices, matters of critical importance to Christians are looming in the days ahead. Family Research Council and FRC Action stand at the forefront of this battle. In these turbulent times, we trust in God's word that He is for us and that He will give us a future and a hope of prosperity. That's why we invite you to join us on September 9th through 11th in Washington, D.C. for the Values Voter Summit. Come to learn, be encouraged, and meet others who will stand for the renewal of this great nation. you'll hear the latest on the threats to our nation's security, your religious freedom, the privacy and safety of our children and grandchildren, and much more. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information and to register. That's valuesvotersummit.org.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. David and Jason Benham have a newly released book that I know you will all be excited about. The brothers are at it again. In their book, Living Among Lions, How to Thrive Like Daniel in Today's Babylon, David and Jason are convinced that the biblical example of Daniel holds the keys to contemporary Christians thriving in a world increasingly hostile to people of faith. Here now are David and Jason Benham.
All right, guys, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Great to be with you, Tony.
Appreciate you having us.
All right, the Sons of Thunder. All right, I've been talking about this book. Let's talk about it. Tell our listeners kind of the premise of what this book's all about.
Well, Tony, this is David speaking. I'll jump in first since I'm the smarter of the two. But we wrote this book, if Jason and I have been traveling the country for the last 2 years after we got fired by HGTV. And there are millions of Christian people of faith around this country that are shrinking back into the shadows for fear of being ridiculed or bullied or harassed into silence. And we know that now is our time to shine the light. The problem in today's culture is not the presence of darkness, it's the absence of light. And so we look back at the life of Daniel, who was a Bible character that greatly encouraged Jason and I as we've gone through several media firestorms in our own faith. And in the life of Daniel, he was a man who lived with conviction, commitment, and stood with courage in Babylon. And when you look at Babylon in Scripture, it's synonymous with wickedness and evil. And we're watching what's happening here in America with the rise of evil. And what we write about in the book is that the same rising tide of evil that makes cowards run makes champions rise. So we want to be like Daniel and stand like champions with courage in today's culture.
So, Jason, how's the response so far to the book?
Well, you know, we rose to number 13 overall in every book in Amazon, which was crazy. Our first book only got to 234, which was awesome, and Amazon actually sold out of it. I had never heard of that before. So we know really good response, and I think it's just because Christians are legitimately discouraged, and what they need to hear is a message of hope. Yeah, it's dark. Of course it is, but we have all the power in heaven and earth inside of us to shine our lights bright in the midst of a dark culture.
But the thing about Daniel, which is why I like you focusing on Daniel, is that he was not a guy looking for a fight. He was actually living out a relationship with Jesus Christ, with his Lord, with his God, and he was not afraid of man. And so when push came to shove, he didn't move. He wasn't looking for it, but he didn't back down from it.
That is exactly right. And so what Daniel was doing, and we write about this in multiple chapters in the book, he was going about his business seeking the welfare of the city. And that's what the prophet Jeremiah, who was the spokesman of the Lord to the captives in Babylon. So Daniel was reading the prophet Jeremiah, and he was telling, God was speaking through Jeremiah, saying, seek the welfare of the nation. Build houses, plant. In the prosperity of the nation, you'll be prosperous. So Daniel and his three friends, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, were doing just that. But when the winds of culture came and they shifted and no longer favored his conviction, they all stood with courage. And that's what we're encouraging Christians to do today is, look, be the best employee that you can be. Be the best entrepreneur you can be. Be the best husband and father and sow into your community. And let's really pour into this nation. Let's be a blessing to this nation. But if ordinances come that target our faith, we're going to stand with courage. And we see what happened in Daniel's life and his three buddies' life. Their nation was transformed. And we believe the same can happen today.
So practical recommendations, suggestions, how people can do this, how they can live like Daniel in today's Babylon.
Well, we split it up into three sections, conviction, commitment, and courage. It starts with conviction, Tony. That's the beauty of Christianity. It's the only religion that can transform a person from the inside out. And that begins with a conviction. You need to know God and then know your identity. But then that conviction needs to manifest itself in commitments, practical commitments, like reading your Bible every day, spending time in prayer, committing to purity, committing to humility, and those types of commitments. When they're wrapped around true, heartfelt conviction, then it leads to the third step, which is courage. And at that point, it's simply a matter of focusing on how big God is and not on how big the problem is. And when you do that, then you will stand when everybody else is running.
In this book, do you tell more about your story and what you've seen in the wake of your encounter with HGTV?
Yes, we spend the first two chapters. It's actually interesting. A publisher was saying, this is odd. You have two author's notes. We have two author's notes that are quite lengthy at the beginning of the book because we're talking about some of the things that we've seen around the country. I mean, even Jason and I, we were slated to be in a faith-based movie, a pretty big one, and yet the production company said, no, you can't be in it because you're the Benham Brothers. It's like, what? This is a faith-based movie? So we talk about all of these things that are happening, and you know, it's interesting, Tony. We wish over the last 4 months, actually over the last 6 months, we could have loaded up chapters with more content, but we had already submitted the manuscript to the publisher, but so much has happened in this nation, but we're seeing a steady decline in morality. George Barna's research at the Trump meeting last week, we were there with you, we're listening to George Barna speak, and we're seeing this steady decline in morality, but now is the time for us to stand and shine our light brightly. And one of the things that we did, Tony, in the book is we sprinkled our principles throughout the book, and then we consolidated them into an appendix at the end of the book. So we have 81 practical how-to principles on how to engage this culture faithfully from a Christian perspective.
All right, guys, we're up against the break, but one final question for you. We got 15 seconds. As you've taken this stand, have you found God faithful?
When your faith intersects with God's faithfulness, you will turn around and be a changed person, and so will your culture.
All right. David and Jason Benham, thanks so much for joining us. Folks, go out and get the book.
Well, you can find out more about today's guest when you go to tonyperkins.com. Also, while you're there, sign up for Tony's Washington Update. It's a daily email highlighting the important issues affecting your faith, family, and freedom. Well, that's it for this week's show. I'm David Salkiel, thanking you for being with us, and I encourage you to be back here next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
The weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you've heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can help support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit tonyperkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 866-372-7234.